Good evening. It is 19 minutes after 5 o'clock. You're listening to Raven Radio, KCAW Sitka. Today is Monday, September 16th, 2013. I'm Ed Ronco with Raven News. A boil water notice for residents near a water main break in Sitka has expired. Officials took a look at water quality test results this morning and ruled the water good enough for regular use. The boil notice was lifted at 9 o'clock this morning. It came after a water main ruptured on Friday afternoon in the 700 block of Sawmill Creek Road. The street was closed down Friday and well into Saturday as crews scrambled to control massive amounts of water and to repair the leak. They found a rupture along a 16-inch water main. It was repaired Friday night, but when the system was repressurized, a second leak sprang up nearby. Repair efforts extended into Saturday. City Environmental Superintendent Mark Buggins says a crew put a temporary fix in place on the second leak, but that they'll need to go back in and complete repairs in the near future. Meanwhile, Interim Municipal Administrator Jay Sweeney commended the staff who responded to the emergency. He said the effort included city employees from the Street Department, Public Works, the Fire Department, and the Police Department, not to mention a handful of municipal contractors, all of whom worked through the night to handle the situation on Friday. This week, Raven Radio is profiling the candidates for municipal office. There are five who have declared their candidacy for either the Sitka Assembly or the school board. We say declared because only four of the candidates will appear on the ballot. The one who won't appear on the ballot is the one we're profiling today. Stephen Eisenbeis is running as a write-in candidate for the Sitka Assembly. Eisenbeis is not a lifelong Sitkan, but he's pretty close.
I moved to Sitka in the summer of 1992 with my mother and brother.
Okay. So you went to school here and you grew up
here?
Correct,
yeah. I started second grade, went all the way through high school, graduated here, and shortly after that moved away for 4 years in order to join the Marine Corps. And since 1992, that's been my only time out of Sitka.
He's thought about running for assembly before, and he thought about it before the filing deadline for this election, too. Initially, he decided against it.
However, when I saw there was only two candidates on the ballot with two positions open, you know, I decided that maybe this is the time. I really feel that Sitka needs a choice in this election, and I'm proud to be that.
Eisenbeis and his wife, Ashley, own Russell's Sporting Goods Store on Lincoln Street. It's a third-generation family business on her side, and Eisenbeis says it's offered him a good perspective on Sitka's economy.
The business climate in town is interesting. There's definitely room for people who want to try hard and succeed here.
As an example, he cites the Homeport Eatery, a new food court open across the street from Russell's.
One person had an idea in their head, and with a lot of drive and ambition, and I'm sure very hard work, they were able to open up and have quite a nice place for Sitka. If you try hard enough in this town, you can succeed. It's all about finding what the people need here.
The last several assemblies have each, at times, heard citizens testify that the city is not business friendly. And each assembly has had members who argue the opposite.
They could both be very much right.
Eisenbeis says it's all in how you define business friendly.
The city needs money to operate. Sales tax is one of the ways they get that money. And if becoming business friendly is eliminating a sales tax or giving money to these businesses, I don't know that that's necessarily the right way to go.
Eisenbeis says there are more discussions that need to happen before he has a strong opinion on whether the city is business-friendly. On education funding, Eisenbeis says Sitka should give as much money as it can afford to give to the school system. But afford is the key word there, he says. And with costs seeming to rise faster than revenue, Eisenbeis says it's important that the city be able to live within its means.
We are going to have to do something, because I know as myself, if I have $6,000 in the bank, I can't go and spend $10,000. It just doesn't work. And the city needs to be run the same way. We can't dig ourselves into a deficit and simply say, oh, well, it'll fix itself later. No, it won't. We cannot spend more money than is coming in.
Deciding how to ensure long-term fiscal strength for Sitka will be up to the people, he says. And as an assembly member, he says he wants to spend a lot of time listening to his constituents.
This is not an elected official's town. This is not the city's town. It's our town. And I really want people to become more proactive in the the solutions to the problems that we are facing now.
Voters who want to pick Eisenbeiss will have to fill in the oval next to the write-in blank and then write Stephen Eisenbeiss on the line. Does it have to be spelled correctly?
With a last name like Eisenbeiss, that could be difficult. But fortunately, no.
The municipal clerk's office confirms that. As long as the bubble is filled in and the voter's intent is clear, the vote will be counted. This is the first in a series of profiles on Sitka's candidates for municipal office. Tomorrow, we'll introduce you to Assembly candidate Ben Maiasato. And on Wednesday, we'll profile Assembly candidate Aaron Swanson. If you'd like to ask them a question, you'll get your shot. The Assembly candidates will be in our studio next week for a live call-in forum from 6:30 until 8 p.m. on Thursday, September 26th. In a drill over the weekend, an Alaska Airlines jet with 64 people on board approached Juneau International Airport Saturday morning. All the victims survived in this drill scenario, and many ate lunch with the emergency responders who came to rescue them. The fake crash involved all aspects of airport emergency response. Casey Kelly of station KTOO was there and filed this report.
The walking wounded are everywhere inside the Civil Air Patrol hangar at Juneau International Airport. Injuries range from bruised foreheads to bloody compound fractures of an arm or a leg to completely severed limbs. Fortunately, it's only makeup, also known as moulage. At about 8:30 a.m., Deputy Airport Manager Mark Cheatham calls for the victims to get ready.
Everybody, that's moulage. I need you out here. We're going to start loading up vans. We're going to put you at the accident scene.
The vans roll up to the Mendenhall Wetlands just off the airport dike trail near the float pond. The trail doubles as the airport's emergency vehicle access road. In a real-life event, first responders would use the narrow strip of gravel to access the scene. A shipping container sits in the middle of the wetlands, simulating the airplane fuselage. The volunteers scatter around it, lying on the ground like victims of the crash. Over at the airport terminal, it doesn't take long for victims' families to show up looking for information about their loved ones. They're met by Red Cross volunteers who assign them roles to play as part of the drill.
You're a victim's family member from another country, and you have limited resources and you need help.
A family assistance center is established at the Extended Stay Hotel across the street from the airport. Ernie Muller is a Red Cross disaster response specialist.
They came in and we registered them. We had people from the Salvation Army to provide spiritual counseling. We had somebody from the Juneau Alliance for Mental Health to provide mental health services if they needed them. If they were hungry, we had food. We had teddy bears for the kids. Just whatever their needs are, we'll try to make it work.
Mueller says the Red Cross has agreements with airlines and the National Transportation Safety Board to provide emergency assistance in the event of a plane crash anywhere in the country. He says it typically takes the group's volunteers a couple hours to mobilize to a real disaster. This is his second time participating in a live drill at the airport, and Mueller says it went much smoother than the previous run.
There was a lot more information flow. We knew what was going on. We had a passenger manifest. We had people who were designated as family and friends. It worked out really well.
As the drill winds down, the emergency crews, airport officials, and volunteers gather back at the Civil Air Patrol hangar. Evaluators who have been watching every aspect of the scenario mingle with participants and discuss how to improve the response. Fire Chief Rich Etheridge is an evaluator for Capital City Fire and Rescue paramedics and firefighters. While he sees a lot to like during the drill, Etheridge says there are always areas for improvement.
You actually talk about these things in training, but to put it hands-on, you find out some of the communication links that we need to practice. One of them was one of the medical officers reporting to the triage officer, and they could have been reporting to the incident commander, and so just trying to straighten out some of that chain of command stuff.
The Federal Aviation Administration requires airports the size of Juneau's to do a live emergency drill every 3 years. This is the first one for Deputy Airport Manager Cheatham, who says one area he'd like to improve is relaying information to the press.
I'd like to be better at being a public relations person, especially with the media. In the future, we're going to have some training for this. So that's one area that I can improve myself on.
In Juneau, I'm Casey Kelly.
Alaska Public Safety Commissioner Joe Masters is resigning. Masters becomes the third commissioner in recent weeks to resign or announce plans to step aside. Revenue Commissioner Brian Butcher recently resigned for a post with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation, while Natural Resources Commissioner Dan Sullivan is scheduled to step down next week amid speculation that he will run for U.S. Senate. Masters held his current position since 2008. His resignation is effective October 15th. He said in his resignation letter that he plans to return to the private sector.